On Point is a production of NPR and WBUR Boston. The program is made possible by your financial support. Please pledge online at WBUR.org.
From WBUR Boston and NPR, I'm Tom Ashbrook, and this is On Point. Nature and our genes set the stage. Mom and dad hold the reins. But siblings play the tune of most childhoods. Hour after hour, day after day, we play with them and fight with them and celebrate and suffer with them. And they play a huge role in shaping our personalities and face to the world. Think Venus and Serena Williams, Prince Harry and Prince William, Eli and Peyton Manning, the Bush brothers, the Olsen twins. You can't have one without the other, not as they are. Think of your own family and the ways you carved and were carved by siblings. Psychologists are paying attention. Up next on Point, siblings, brothers and sisters, and how they make us who we are. Joining me now from California is Catherine Conger, professor of human and community development at the University of California, Davis. She studies sibling relationships across the lifespan and how these relationships mold our behaviors. Catherine Conger, thanks very much for being with us.
Hi, good to be here.
Great to have you. And with us from Tempe, Arizona is Kimberly Updegraff, professor of family and human development at Arizona State. She has studied how sibling relationships shape our behavior with friends and peers. Kimberly Updegraff, thank you for being here.
Thank you. It's good to be here.
Catherine, first to you, if I may, what's the big picture here? We thought it was sort of genes and mom and dad that were the big imprint. What's the sibling imprint on the sort of deep fundamentals of who we are, who we become, our personalities?
Well, siblings begin the day that the second child shows up in the family, and they have a lot of opportunities to shape our behavior and our personalities as we move through life together. And so they really are our companions across the lifespan.
I think a lot of people may look at them as rivals, playmates, sometimes an inspiration perhaps, but not necessarily the influences that carve our fundamental personalities. Kimberly Updegraff, is it too much to suggest that they have a role in that?
No, I think it's very true. I think there's so many ways that siblings influence your family life, your relationships outside the family, who you become, how you respond to things, how you learn to relate to people, that they're really an important part of social development.
Social development, is that the same as saying who we are? Is that the same as saying shaping our personality? Or just is that the whole works? Is that the show?
I think that, yeah, I would say it's the same as shaping your personality, who you are, how you relate to the world, how you think about things.
And it helps shape your behaviors, your interactions. So you may develop a way that you interact with a brother or a sister, and you may discover that you're repeating those same types of interactions and behaviors when you start going to school and when you end up in different peer groups, and you may look back and say, gee, this feels kind of familiar, and sure enough, it's something that you learned to do at home with your brother or sister.
Give us some examples, Catherine, of how that might work with a younger brother, younger sister, older brother, older sister. You've studied and looked at a lot here. Give us some examples of how those interactions might concretely shape the people we turn out to be.
Well, one of the things that really spurred the articles that appeared in the recent special issue of Journal of Family Psychology was the startling finding that older siblings really help shape kids who are trying out deviant behavior. So if you've got an older brother and you're a younger brother who really likes your older brother and you're trying to fit in, and your older brother is smoking and drinking and going out and committing other delinquent acts, the younger brother is much more likely to follow in that older brother's footsteps.
So there's the role model dynamic toward deviance. What about toward accomplishment? Does it work just as well?
It can work just as well. So if you've got an older brother or sister who is accomplished in music, or they take risks, they try new things, that may inspire a younger brother or sister to try new things. They may not do exactly the same thing. Sometimes siblings really like to distinguish themselves by trying out different behaviors. So one may be a really accomplished musician and the other one might go into sports. But there's a little competition there that can be healthy competition and help promote positive behavior.
Kimberly, presumably the imprint begins well before smoking and drinking and general hell-raising. How does it work? I mean, when kids are already toddlers and interacting as siblings, do we have character being shaped right there, and how?
I think that your siblings are really your first companions, your first opportunities to learn how to resolve conflicts, how to negotiate, you know, how to learn to share. And so I think what the research has shown is from very early on, these siblings are your first peers, that you learn how to interact with other age mates through these interactions with your sibling.
And what about the way those interactions unfold? Is it just nature? Is it a personality that siblings bring to it that decides whether they're best buddies or, you know, mortal rivals? Is it the way parents handle siblings? Catherine, how do you see that?
Well, both things are true. You hit on two really important points in the research, in that the personality of both of the children really can influence how they get along. So if you've got a sister who is really outgoing and excited about things, and you've got a younger brother who's more reserved, they may have a little difficulty getting along, but they can certainly learn how to resolve conflicts between the two of them. And it also makes a big difference. We've discovered Lori Kramer's research has really shown that when parents step in, they can either step all over the relationship and make it difficult for the siblings, or the parents can really step in a constructive fashion and really help those toddlers and preschoolers learn to negotiate their relationship. So it's satisfying for both of them.
Satisfying, and maybe leaves them better negotiators, better actors in the social world of their adulthood. Kathy's calling from Boston. Hi, Kathy. You're on the air.
Hi, Tom.
Hi. What do you know, Kathy? What's your experience?
Well, my experience, I'm one of six. And in my family, I'm the youngest of the oldest three, even though there's not a big gap. So I'm like the third oldest. And for us, you know, I was saying that for my family, all six of us need to be together in the same room about every 6 weeks.
Why? Why? What for? It's your oxygen tank? Why?
Yeah, a little bit. I mean, I think we did have a dysfunctional family growing up in terms of my dad was a drinker. But I think there is this weird thing about our family where we're actually a little dysfunctional, each of us individually, but we're highly functional as a group. And so we kind of use this, you know, this need to get together each time to kind of, you know, I don't know, reoxygenate ourselves and get us ready to, like, go out and face the world again.
So you draw strength when the sixsome gets together. Stick with us, Kathy. Kimberly Updegraff, how about that? Is this typical? Do siblings much later in adulthood tend to draw strength from one another, or is it just as common for them to, you know, run off to opposite ends of the country?
I think it really depends. I think there's a lot of variability in how sibling relationships work out over time, and I think there's certain dynamics that may lead to that closeness. And in this case, it sounds like the big family and all that they coped with, that, you know, no one really understands what they've been through like your sibling, because they've been there all along. And that's what researchers have really come to realize, is the siblings are the ones who are there through all of this. But I think that we've also seen that sister-sister pairs and same-sex pairs spend more time together, and over time that those particular dynamics really seem to stay close, so that, you know, there are particular kinds of dyads that really may hold on to these lifetime bonds.
And Catherine, what about Kathy's observation that she and her siblings don't feel ever quite as whole as when they're together, that they're not fully themselves, fully, you know, sort of effective and clicking unless they've got each other's company?
Well, I think that makes a lot of sense, because they can kind of let their hair down and really relax and be with one another. Maybe how they can't be with their friends, because they don't have to dredge up family history, because they all know the family history, and they can kind of get together and just relax and have fun and talk and not have to relive things, but enjoy each other's company and be supportive. That's one of the key things that we find about siblings, especially in adulthood, is the social support that they provide for one another.
Kathy, do you ever feel like you just want to get away from all those five brothers and sisters, or is it always a support for you?
Well, there's certainly times, but I would say it's just the opposite. There is, when my sister needed to go back to school, you know, everybody was there to make sure that, you know, she had the money she needed, she could live where she wanted to. So it's definitely more that we're a support for each other. And so, you know, you take the bad with the good. I mean, there's certain days where, you know, you're screaming at each other, but 5 minutes later, you're glad you're all together.
There's a family of six and a vote for how it works when it works. Kathy, thanks a lot for calling. We've been joined from California by Catherine Conger, from Arizona State by Kimberly Updegraff, and right now with me in the studio, family therapist and psychologist, Dr. Amy Gerson. Dr. Gerson, thanks for being here.
Great to be here. Thank
you. So you hear the family stories. How often do sibling joys or tensions figure into people's sense of themselves and their struggles and solutions in the world?
Well, I think people have a yearning for a supportive, close relationship with their siblings. Unfortunately, that doesn't always happen. Kathy, your last caller, sounds like she has a very healthy sibling support. And
working pretty well. They went through some tough times,
right,
and came through it strong and united.
That might have helped them. They're mm-hmm. from a large family, which the larger number of siblings, the more powerful that sibling subsystem will be,
mm-hmm.
because sibs can form a coalition to offset parental power mm-hmm. or problems, which is, sounds like what went on.
Consciously or unconsciously, they can form that
yes,
coalition.
Yes, they're not necessarily mm-hmm. doing it consciously.
Mm-hmm.
I see some people who have a lot of conflict with their siblings because they're caught up in old, ineffective, or pathological patterns that are really relics from their childhood.
Sort of from the playground where they maybe were punching one another or they were competing for parental attention or affection, all that stuff.
Yes, where they're frozen in that time and they really don't separate then from now. And part of the work in therapy is having them understanding that paradigm and work to changing it.
Catherine Conger, there's the tension between siblings as adult that trails back all the way to childhood. But even when we're not with our siblings, are they shaping our interactions with other people? Do we see the whole world as kind of, you know, surrogates for our sisters and brothers?
I believe that some people certainly can. They may take slights that happen at the office or run-ins that they have with friends as kind of a recreation of a relationship, you know, that they had with a brother or sister who was kind of in the same. So if you're an older sister and a younger brother and you had some differences with them
yeah.
and you fall into that pattern with coworkers, they can certainly, and vice versa, certainly friends can influence how you end up interacting with your siblings, too.
So the mold can start early. Braden's calling from Nashville, Tennessee. Hi, Braden, you're on the air.
Hey, Tom. Appreciate you taking my call.
Sure.
Long-time listener, first-time caller. This is a very interesting topic. I am the eldest of three siblings, all boys.
Okay.
We're 2 years apart, and it's just interesting to me how my parents divorced when I was 15, so just kind of take that step
mm-hmm.
back.
Mm-hmm.
And as far as the patterns go of how we resemble one another, I find that I follow the patterns of my father, whereas my two younger brothers are, I mean, they're spitting images of each other. And there was never any, I guess, lead into them taking up traits of my character. And I just wonder.
So do you feel like you're from different families or just different wings of your own family?
Well, no. I mean, we're all very close. And kind of what your guest is saying as far as the support group goes, I mean,
mm-hmm.
we've been through a lot. And we've all come close. But it's just, it's funny to me how the attributes of the two younger brothers don't follow the patterns of me.
That is interesting. Yeah, your question there, Braden.
Well, I guess my question is it... is it unusual for the two younger siblings to group, whereas the oldest would kind of follow the father? Or how does that work?
Well, one of the parents anyway. Let us pick it up. Kimberly Updegraff, what about it? Do children naturally align with different parents? Do you see, is it common for let's say, whether there's one, I mean, two or three or four or five for sort of coalitions or alliances around different parents, or for parental traits to be more evident in some and then them ending up as kind of alliances within the sibling group? How does that play out?
We do find that the older sibling is more likely to emanate parents than younger siblings. We kind of find that it's a family hierarchy where the oldest child in the family is more likely to kind of look up and role model parents.
Okay.
And then the younger children in the family are looking up the line to older siblings. Or, you know, in this case, it sounds like the youngest one was looking up to the next oldest sibling.
Mm-hmm.
So I do think that that isn't an uncommon possibility. I think that part of the reason people became so interested in siblings was because siblings grow up in the same family, yet they can turn out very differently. And, you know, people expected that siblings who had the same parents, who shared half the genes, mm-hmm. are going to turn out alike. And what people have found is that siblings are really very different. And there's this whole part of family life that people call the non-shared environment that are all these experiences that siblings have that make them different rather than similar.
So, but is it the non-shared environment? That's things that they do independent of one another. But is it their actual interaction that makes them different? That, you know, I sort of shape myself in opposition to that brother that I'm always punching, or he to me, or sister?
I think that's all part of the non-shared environment. Part of that is the idea that's kind of been talked about a little bit here, not mm-hmm. identified, is that de-identification idea. That
de-identification, what's that mean?
It means that you strive to be different from your sibling. You try, right. You strive to find your own niche in the family that's different. Kathy talked about the idea of one sibling excelling in music and another one in sports. Your older sibling's really good in this one area. You're not going to try to compete to be as good in that area, but you're going to find your own niche in the family so that you can get the attention and the rewards for the things that you excel at. Mm. And I think there is a process where, you know, siblings maybe consciously or unconsciously choose different kinds of ways to achieve.
Dr. Gerson, do you see that years later in adulthood, a competition from childhood going on, or still an effort to differentiate from a sibling that may have been overbearing or a rival?
Yeah, some of the situations I see are people still competing or resenting their sibling. Very often this can happen when parents interfere in the sibling subsystem by splitting the children, playing them against each other. Usually this is unconscious because most parents will say they want their children to be close.
But are you saying that in a state of nature, those sibling relationships would be a Garden of Eden if only parents didn't set them against each other?
Not a Garden of Eden, but they wouldn't be to the pathological states okay. they sometimes get. Sometimes parents try to level the playing field between mm-hmm. Their children.
Good or bad, healthy or unhealthy?
Unhealthy.
Really?
Can be unhealthy because they'll take, I've seen instances where one sibling was very talented, creative, but the parents felt that was making life harder for the younger sibling. And so
even the playing field between the domineering older sibling and the younger one, I could understand that impulse. What's the downside? What happens?
The downside for the sibling?
Yeah.
Well, the talented sibling is, the talent is devalued, and mm-hmm. so they can feel guilt about excelling at something. They're always being tamped down, and they come to resent that other sibling.
Does it work for the younger sibling? Do they feel lifted up?
I don't really think it works effectively for the younger sibling either.
So
I just think it creates a certain tension that is not healthy.
And yet tough for parents to resist a little social engineering right under their roof there.
Yes.
Dawn's calling from Newburyport, Massachusetts. Hi, Dawn. You're on the air.
Oh, hi. I was just wondering if you had taken a close look at genetics in this, because I'm adopted mm-hmm. and I couldn't be more opposite to my sibling that I grew up with.
Right.
We're not genetically related, but we grew up in the same home. And I recently found my half-sister, who is, you know, we share a father.
Right.
And we're like twins. And we did not grow up together, but we have, you know, the same kind of life path, the same reactions to things, the same values.
So you find a genetic half-sister as an adult and feel closer sort of naturally than you did with the brother that you shared your childhood with.
Yeah, like, adopted. You know, I love my brother, and mm-hmm. we share those kind of that family history that we share is very important to me. But if I met him today, there's no way that I would want to get to know him. We have totally different values and politics and everything like that. You know what I mean? And
I absolutely know what you mean. Let us pick it up. Catherine Conger, how about it? Here's the genetic question that comes in again. You know, after all that, is the shaping more about our experiences with one another or genes that we share?
Well, both things come into play. Certainly, there's some sense that if you share a genetic heritage, you have more opportunity for those genes to make you similar on things. So genes that you share with a sister or a half-sister that you didn't know may influence your personality traits so that you have a similar style of talking or relating to one another. And yet we also need to take the family environment into account and look at those experiences, just as Kimberly was talking about. How your parents treat you is also a powerful force in terms of how your relationship can come about. So we really need to look at, you know, full siblings only share about half of their genes, and twins share 100%, identical twins share 100%. And so the studies of twins and adoptive siblings are really important in terms of informing us how genetics and the environment play into shaping who we are.
Now you've got this Journal of Family Psychology, a special issue, really looking at this. I've got just a big question here, Catherine. Have there been studies done on what is the norm about whether siblings grow up to be close or antagonistic or sort of neutral toward one another? Are there numbers? Are there percentages that are well known in the field?
Boy, that's a tough one. I think that maybe we need about 20 more years of study on siblings before we can really look at that. And I think, you know, that's the thing that's been so fun, for there to be a critical mass of studies now in terms of looking at siblings over time. I think that's one of the things that's really changed, is there are more longitudinal studies being able to look at how siblings interact with one another and how they turn out.
Kimberly, do you have a gut sense from your work with siblings, you know, about what percentage turn out to be close and what percent don't?
I really don't think we know that. I think that, like Kathy said, that, and I think studies of siblings in young adulthood are really pretty rare, and studies of siblings over time are also incredibly rare up until this point. So I think we really can't say. I do think that we know that there's reasonable stability in sibling relationships. So sibling relationships that are close in early childhood tend to be close in middle childhood and adolescence. So I think that there is certainly some stability to sibling relationships, but I don't think that we know a definitive answer on what percent of siblings are close versus are conflictual.
What about gender-wise? Do sisters tend to be closer than brothers, or any idea?
Yes, absolutely.
In adulthood, I guess, or childhood, or both.
I think that there's a pretty consistent trend that the sister-sister pairs are the particularly close dyad of the four possibilities. Mm-hmm. That these girls who have a greater potentially orientation towards intimacy and closeness and tend to be particularly supportive when there's tough times, that there is a really consistent pattern of these sister-sister pairs being particularly supportive.
Interesting. Valerie's calling from Washington, Connecticut. Hi, Valerie, you're on the air.
Oh, hi. Yeah, this is an interesting show. I was curious. I grew up with my brother was 4 years older than me. Mm-hmm. He was, I would say, abusive would cover it well.
Abusive toward you?
Yes. Mm-hmm. Very violent. I always saw him as basically something, a very spiky being, because all his elbows and knees and everything hurt.
Yeah.
But I did absolutely worship him because he was my brother. Mm-hmm. And so I would be getting into trouble or bleeding or something, and I would end up going to mom or dad. And basically they used to say to me, how many times have we got to tell you not to go so close to your brother? And so I started to take on responsibility for anything that hurt me. Mm-hmm. And found a way of, and frankly, it made sense and still does to a degree. I can make it make sense that it's my fault. And I just wondered, if this sort of willingness to take on the guilt of the world maybe came from my brother. It's only just occurring to me that that might have been it.
Valerie, stick with us. Amy Gerson, what do you hear in this story?
Well, I think that could very well be if she's taking on guilt in other situations that she learned that. Basically, the message from her parents was that she was responsible for those injuries, that she...
stay away from me.
She instigated those injuries. The parents really could have done better if they functioned as mediators. And, you know, just listening to that story, I would wonder, why was her brother so violent? What was he being abused also by either the father or someone else? Or was that just his personality? Or how did he get that personality?
Valerie, do you have a sense of that? And I guess I'm also curious to ask you, what's your adult relationship with your brother?
Well, I moved 3,000 miles away from my entire family.
So you took your parents' advice finally. You stayed away. You got away.
Yes. On the other hand, I still absolutely adore my brother. But I do, when I go home sometimes, I try to ask him questions about... I suspect even my own memory is what happens. And so when I think about the things that happened to me when I was a child, I tend to say, well, you know, Valerie, maybe you're making it up. Maybe it's not really true. And so I try to get him to discuss these things on the few times that I go home to England. And he is emotionally totally closed. He refuses to discuss our childhood in any shape or form. It's as though it never happened. So I can't get answers, and I obviously can't ask my mother and father because the question is implicit of their guilt, if you know what I mean.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, they're old now. I don't want to go there with them. And anyway, I think they have this wonderful fantasy childhood memory of ours, which once in a while when they talk about it, it sounds like, gosh, was that us?
Right. Right now, Maureen's calling from Farmington, Connecticut. Hi, Maureen. You're on the air.
Hi, Tom.
Hi.
I sort of wanted to revisit that idea of the dynamic playing out in the workplace. I'm the youngest of six and four sisters, one brother.
Okay.
And I had a very supportive sibling relationship with almost everybody.
Good for you.
And I count myself very lucky for that. But what I found is a couple of times in the workplace, people would say to me, you almost seem like a sibling to me. And I believe in the few instances those were positive compliments.
Yes.
But I was
wondering, like to think so,
if there's any anecdotes or any evidence that those can be very negatively perceived traits and maybe even career busters.
If you seem like the little sister to them, for example.
Or, in another case, the domineering older brother-sister.
Huh, interesting. Kimberly, what do you make of the question?
That's a good question. I think that, you know, appearing to be someone's sibling, you know, we know that sibling relationships are intense. They're emotionally intense, so they have this high positive aspect to them and their high negative aspect to them.
Mm-hmm.
So it's hard to know how to... you know, take that comment. I do think that what I found in my research is that girls who do have brothers learn these kind of control strategies that are typically male and that they use them outside of the family. So I think you learn these strategies to interact with in these kind of mixed sex settings.
Control strategies that are typically male. What do you mean by that?
You are the person in the relationship that makes more of the decisions, that kind of dominates how things work.
Okay.
And these are kinds of strategies that we typically see in all boy interactions.
Mm-hmm.
But girls who have sisters learn them from their brothers and seem to display them in their interpersonal relationships with their peers.
Girls that have brothers. So, what about the fact that Maureen is the youngest of six, so she had to deal with lots of older siblings? Has she then taken on, you know, a super sibling nature somehow that her colleagues feel at work? Is that possible?
I think that she probably has had a lot of opportunities to learn and negotiate interpersonal relationships. And it seems in Maureen's case that was really probably a strength of being the youngest in the family, is that she had a lot of opportunities to learn how to relate and interact, and that's probably really helped in the workplace.
Maureen, it sounds like you're saying you're not so sure if it's been an advantage or not.
Well, the people have told me are people who have, as far as a workplace relationship can be, have been intimates and have said, you know, you can only play out this relationship, but they haven't
criticize me.
But do you feel diminished when they see you as a sibling, or is it a compliment?
I felt less professional.
Interesting.
I felt diminished professionally.
Little sister, once again.
I'm sorry?
Little sister, once again.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I mean, in some ways, I think, like Catherine said, my traits, some of those traits are very helpful. Like, I'm being part of a big family, we just got things done.
Mm-hmm.
So as an employee, you give me a task, I just get it done. But then, you know, hearing those comments from coworkers, at the time it seemed like a compliment. After the fact, I had to think, wow, am I being seen as a professional or am I being seen as the little sister?
That is interesting. Maureen, thanks for your call. Catherine Conger, what about workplaces and sibling status, even, you know, where we fall in the birth order? I mean, I've heard stories over the years of recruiters who look to hire this or that. Maybe they look to hire eldest children, eldest sons. You know, it's kind of unbelievable, but I've heard that. Do we carry a sibling character with us to the workplace that may help determine where we end up in an organization, in a hierarchy?
Well, there are certainly some people who think that birth order has a lot to do in terms of how well you do at work and who you should marry and how you kind of go out into life in general. And certainly, I think that birth order is a popular concept because it's so easy to grasp, and there's a lot of beliefs that go along with that. And so if people believe that a firstborn male is going to be a high achiever and a good, you know, conforming to the rules and get things done, then they're going to look for that whether or not that is really true. I was thinking about Maureen, your caller, and thinking that what she should do is maybe ask her coworkers who made that comment where they fall in the birth order. And maybe they're just reacting because they're kind of jealous older siblings who think the younger one's getting attention because she gets right in there and gets things done.
Is birth order character still, is it seen as having legitimacy, or is that seen by, in your field, Catherine, as kind of old, I don't want to say old wives' tales anymore. Old wives are husband's tales.
No, I think that it's difficult to pin down. The results have been very inconsistent, and a lot of the older studies didn't control for other things in the family in terms of looking at parents' education and children's personality. They just looked at birth order. And I think we're now thinking that birth order definitely has some relevance and that we should not ignore it, but we also should not overplay the role that it has in terms of determining personality and family relationships. Hmm.
Amy's calling from Somerville, Massachusetts. Hi, Amy. You're on the air.
Hi, how are you?
Very well. What do you know, Amy?
I'm extremely, extremely close with my younger sister. We always have been. And it's interesting, I mean, so much so that even my mother and my husband say, oh, we feel excluded from your relationship.
How many years apart are you, Amy? What's the age gap?
We're 2 years apart.
Mm-hmm, okay.
And one thing that has been interesting is that when I met my husband, we went through rough times, my sister and I, because we were so close, I think it was very hard for her to let somebody else in.
Right.
And, you know, we had to figure out, what's this new relationship now that there's somebody else that might, you know, I think for her it felt like, oh, he was going to take her place.
Mm-hmm.
And for my husband, I think it was hard for him because he felt like, God, I can never be as close to Amy as her sister is. So I'm just curious as to if that's something that you see with other sibling groups, that when a third person comes in, you know, a spouse, does that change the relationship, and how do people kind of work through that?
That's fascinating. Dr. Garrison, what about it? You've got, in this case, very close siblings.
Yes.
Then comes in the spouse.
Yes.
Do you find tension with this frequently or not?
Yes, because there'd be displacement. But in adding the spouse, displacement of her sister. And it's learning new patterns, including this, you know, now it would be a triad, including the husband. And there is that, there's just that history. Her sister has been with her from the beginning, so she's has a knowledge of her that her husband really can never have in that kind of way.
But does the spousal relationship have to come at the expense of the sibling relationship?
No. I think it's learning, as I said, adjusting to this, to the triad, and not having it come at the expense, not having it become not having the spouse come between them.
Catherine Conger, I wonder if over time, we may sort of blend into the family culture of a spouse, sort of lose some of the coloring of that sibling coalition, a word we heard earlier, and take on more of the coloring of a spouse. Does that necessarily mean moving away from siblings?
No, I think that actually it can enrich the sibling relationship because it may allow you to take a step back and really appreciate the positive aspects of your sibling relationship, particularly if you had some conflict. Your spouse may say, "Oh, well, gee, I don't see it that way at all. Maybe you should, talk to your sister about that and see if you can work out that problem." I think that the potential is there for spousal relationships and even friendships to enrich the sibling relationship. And in fact, we have some anecdotal evidence. I do a survey with my undergrads every year, and many of them report that as soon as one of them moved away from home, in fact, it took a little of the intensity out of the relationship, and they discovered that, gee, they really liked each other once one of them was living outside of the home.
I'm sure that's a common experience, sort of off to work or off to college, and the pressure cooker calms down a little bit. I wonder about the difference between friends and siblings long-term. Kimberly Updegraff, as, let's say, confidants in life, do you have a sense of where people are more likely to turn, or what kind of confiding people tend to do in siblings versus friends and vice versa?
I think that it depends on what's available to you. We find that, for example, sisters who have younger brothers really turn to their friends when they get to adolescence and they have the strong need for intimacy and closeness and advice about all the things that they're dealing with in adolescence. And those who have brothers are really turning to friends. But we find that sister-sister pairs over time are really close and confiding in each other. So I think that part of it depends on what's available to you in the sibling relationship in terms of whether you turn to a sibling or a friend.
Do you have a sense of, it makes me want to ask, is there a sweet spot in all this? If you could define the perfect structure where you'd like to fall, how many brothers, sisters, and where you'd like to be in the birth order, is there a sweet spot?
I think it probably depends on your personality.
Oh, come on. And,
researchers don't like to give definitive.
Right.
There's one answer to everything. We believe it's a lot more complex than that.
Yes. But I
wish to have girls with sisters, and when I had children, I got boys with a brother. But I wished for sisters because I knew how close those dyads were over time. So I wished for two girls, but I didn't get that.
Yeah, we don't get to choose. Amy Gerson, so people work with what we've got, and sometimes it's very close and sometimes it's very difficult all the way.
Right. Sometimes it is. I would agree that I see women that don't have sisters turning to friends rather than brothers, that pattern, just in terms of a sharing closeness or that depending, on their friends as siblings. Also, just the distance in this country, if people have separated and moved all over the country, sometimes there are no close siblings nearby.
They can be a long, long way off and very often are. Sometimes they can be right around the corner and a long way off.
Correct.
But we hear about intimacy and its advantages and how that shapes each of us at the same time. Fascinating dynamic and conversation, and we're grateful to each of you for being with us. Amy Gerson in the studio with me, family therapist and psychologist in Lexington, Massachusetts. Dr. Gerson, thank you very much for being here.
Thank you.
And Kimberly Updegraff in Tempe, Arizona, at the Arizona State University in the Department of Family and Human Development there. Kimberly, thank you for joining us.
Thank you.
And Catherine Conger, University of California, Davis. Catherine Conger, thanks for being here.
Thank you.
I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point.